You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Why We Watch, the show for fans, by fans, about fans. I am Mags, and with me is, every now and again, I'll get a guest who should have been on the show so long ago, and just time zones and schedules always end up getting in the way. This guy is one of the best people on wrestling Twitter. He's one of the best content creators in the wrestling sphere. An absolute inspiration to not only me, but to a lot of us guys who create this kind of content. He's one of the gold standard of this industry. Talking to everything pro wrestling's very own, Mr. Conrad Cushman. Conrad, welcome finally to Why We Watch.
Mags, thank you so much for having me on. I greatly appreciate being on this episode. This is long overdue. I'm glad that I finally got asked. If you guys can, make sure you pay Mags to get onto one of these because it's well worth it. Definitely one of the best podcasts, but thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Just, I appreciate that so much. I've said for a long, long time that there's been people who set the standard in this game, and you are definitely one of those people. Your professionalism, your work ethic, the way you're striving to always be better. You are such an inspiration to us, and knowing your work ethic and working closely with you behind the scenes with the now defunct Brainbuster, you've just been a big influence on not only me but a lot of people in this kind of like business.
Oh, thank you for that.
Absolutely, not a problem. So, yeah, let's get into your wrestling story, why you watch wrestling, simple as that. So, Conrad, what was the first experience or memory that you have of wrestling?
That is tough to say, Mags. I tell a lot of people that it's one that I don't remember. A lot of wrestling fans have the story, like, it was me and my dad, and it was 1992 or something like that, but I don't really remember. My memory probably wasn't developed yet as a child to remember what pro wrestling was, is, or is all about. But what I can do is tell you from the time that my memory did start working, when I could actually remember things and what I remember doing. And you're going to probably laugh at some of the stuff on here, but I've got a long, long story with pro wrestling. The first thing that I can honestly remember doing that's really old is preschool. I think I was 3 or 4 years old, and I brought some of my favorite pro wrestlers to school. And I don't know, were you a kid of the little Hasbro action figure days? You know what I'm talking about, right? They do all the cool moves. Well, one of my favorites were Demolition. They painted their face. They were awesome. Mm-hmm. Great tag team, right? I had Axe, Smash, and Crush. I brought them to school for show and tell. Now, not until years later did I think I probably mortified my preschool teacher. I brought basically dudes who were dressed like gimps into the classroom with black masks. I'm like, these are so cool. These are my favorite action figures. And they're probably like, what do your parents let you play with when you go home? Wow. And I'm just like, but you never think of it like that. I'm a wrestling fan as a kid. I didn't know any better. I just thought they looked cool. So that's one of the first memories I have, being about 3 or 4 years old, going to preschool with some friends who I'm still friends with today on Facebook, that I've known since I was a little kid. Absolutely, they've all known that I've always loved pro wrestling, probably the biggest pro wrestling fan, always in school and in class and everything. So that's how I got started into the wrestling world, basically. That's one of my first memories of it.
Wow, what a great story. Over here, we had the Mattel figures. I had quite a few where you could you press down on the body and then it sprung back up and stuff like that. And then the movable arms, yeah, I remember all them. I passed on all my figures to my kids who have now got them all stored away, ready to pass on to their kids. So, yeah, it's fun times with wrestling figures, absolutely fun times. So who was your first wrestling hero? Who was the first wrestler that you gravitated towards?
Oh, that's a tough one as well to say. That would probably be a better question for my mother. her and my father bought me a lot of those wrestling action figures growing up. My mind always wandered towards those. But I played with Ninja Turtles, everything else too. This sounds more like the toys that made us more than why we watch. But the action figures played a big part into why I enjoyed professional wrestling. I always liked watching it, and I would recreate the matches that were happening on WWF Superstars at the time. And some of the people that I loved, obviously, were the main three guys. I would say Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage, and the Ultimate Warrior. More so Macho Man and Warrior, because around when I was three or four, it was 1990, 91. So you guys can figure out my age probably at this point. But those were the main two guys, and I loved everything that they were doing. Even though Macho Man was a bad guy as the Macho King at that time, he was still really good in the ring, someone fun to watch. He had Sherry with him. And then the Ultimate Warrior, he was the bee's knees at the time. He was a crazy dude with tassels, lots of colors, and he would shake the ropes and take people down, and you just always wanted to be a part of that.
Yep, same. It's very, very similar story to me. I got into wrestling because my gran watched wrestling, and her favourites were Warrior, were Macho Man, were Hogan. So they ended up being my favourites around that time. So, yeah, it's very, very similar stories. Mm. So when did you go to your first ever live wrestling event?
I looked this up the other day. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but I forgot what Twitter account it was. It was either Fight or NWA or somebody asked, what was the first wrestling event you attended? And I think RJ was in on the thread. I don't know if I can remember. I know that one of the matches were the British Bulldog versus The Undertaker. I think it was a house show in Niagara Falls, New York. And I'm looking it up right now. You can see me on the phone here. Trying to remember where it was. And I think that they have the card written down here. Yes. Shout out to Scott's Blog of Doom. Brian Bayless wrote this about a year ago. And he said, it's from the Niagara Falls Convention Center in Niagara Falls, New York. The hosts are Bobby the Brain Heenan, Gorilla Monsoon. I don't remember even seeing them. I remember going to the original Pancake House, and I was scared to death of The Undertaker. I was a much smaller lad, as you would say, back then, so I could fit on my dad's shoulders. And I was sitting there watching it, and I just remember, like, yo, is this dude really dead? Like, he looks like he is. His eyes look really puffy and stuff, so I didn't know what to believe. But on this card, I see we have Legion of Doom with Paul Ellering versus Von Kruss and Brian Breger. We had a special report from Lord Alfred Hayes, so this is probably like the TV version. Repo Man versus Sonny Blaze. I was probably there when Repo Man picked up a win over somebody, so that's a remarkable thing. Big hey, Boss Man.
Don't badmouth Repo Man. He was one of my favorites. He really, really was.
Yeah, I loved him when he was smashing Demolition. Boss Man had a match for a quick win. Shawn Michaels with Sensational Sherry versus Glenn Ruth. I have not heard that name in a while. And I think Glenn Ruth was Thrasher, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Might have been. Wow.
It was.
Rick Martel versus Scott Taylor, who I believe is Scotty Too Hotty. Mm-hmm. See, and you don't think anything of these guys when you hear their names. High Energy versus Rich Mitchell and Dave Roulette. The Berserker versus Jay Sledge. And The Undertaker versus the British Bulldog. Like, so weird, right? To see those. And you would just never think anything of it these days. But that was my first event. I remember that match distinctly, just being scared of The Undertaker.
Yeah, we didn't really get a lot of shows over here. It was only like the mid to late 90s when we started getting WWF coming over to Britain a lot more. But yeah, shows like SummerSlam 92 over in Wembley, just massively, massively iconic. Yeah, just brilliant shows. And it it's that what made me more of a fan than the actual watching the wrestling, the live aspect of it, like just the entertainment of a show.
Yeah, I remember that SummerSlam 92 show very distinctly. When they used to have the magazines and stuff back in the day, you know, you would try and get them from your grocery store or wherever. At least that's how we would get them. During that time frame, though, I do remember I wanted that DVD so badly from the SummerSlam 92. There were two angles that really hooked me for that show. Actually, three. Shawn Michaels and Rick Martel with Sherry in between them, because I always wondered if Sherry was like Rick Martel's, because her name was Sherry Martel, that was like her brother, her husband, or what was up with that, and Sean being involved. You're a five-year-old kid, so I didn't know any better. The second match was the Ultimate Warrior versus Macho Man Randy Savage for the WWF title at the time. Warrior and Savage had a feud that went on before that, but Ric Flair was in the picture with Mr. Perfect, and it was whose corner was he going to be in? Yep. And you were wondering, like, well, who's the bad guy here? Am I not seeing something? And then I won't ruin what happens for people, but it's definitely worth a match to go back and look at. Don't keep your expectations too high, though, as well. And then the British Bulldog and Bret Hart, two of my favorite baby faces at that time. Seeing them lock horns was a thing of beauty. And I remember wanting that VHS cassette tape so bad. So, Dad, wherever you are, if you're listening to this, I wanted that tape.
Yeah, and just seeing the Bulldog main event a huge pay-per-view at Wembley Stadium. Yes, just absolutely amazing. And then to go over and win as well.
Yeah, that was I love the finish of that match. Like, when I was a kid, I used to be able to remember, like, the finishes of matches and how the transitions even happened. That's wild. I can't do it now, but back in the day, I was like, okay, boom, he came off the ropes. He goes for the sunset flip. He grabs him, pins his shoulders down. And I always call it the Bulldog Brett finish because I love it. Yeah. Love it.
So, has there ever been a time where you fell out of love with wrestling, or it just wasn't appealing to you anymore?
I think I won't say it didn't appeal to me. I consider myself in a unique age bracket for pro wrestling. I'm 33. Well, I'm turning 33. By the time they listen to this, I assume that it'll already be past my birthday, but we're recording this a few days prior to my birthday. And, when you look at pro wrestling and falling in and out of it, so I'm a kid. I grew up in the 80s with Hogan Must Pose, Warrior, Savage. Cool. Everything was bright and colorful. As a younger kid, you know, you're 9, 10 years old. You still watch wrestling for the most part. I still wake up every morning eating cereal in my underwear, watching Bobby's World, X-Men, WWF on the Fox station for superstars that they still had at the time. So you still got The Undertaker, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels is on the rise, Diesel, Razor Ramon, you know, the new generation era. Mm-hmm. Yep. The time when I should have fallen out was probably 95, 96. But what held on to me was guys jumping over to WCW. And as I was becoming older, you know, you start getting into girls, you start wanting to hang out with your friends a little bit more. Wrestling became cool because of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
So I don't think I ever really fell out of wrestling. I think it always just kind of stuck with me. I have struggling periods with it, but for the most part, I never stopped watching. I always stayed with it throughout my entire life.
Wow. It's rare, especially doing this show, that someone's stuck with it all the way through. People tend to have that lulls where it wasn't the cool thing, or like I said, they get interested in girls or guys or whatever. It's very rare that someone's stuck with it all the way through. I mean, I had a 10-year gap where I didn't watch any wrestling at all from 2006 all the way up to 2016. But I've always likened it to being almost like a drug. You're never out of it. And I always kept involved like with going onto dirt sheets and wrestling websites. So I always knew what was going on. I just wasn't watching the product.
Yeah, that's a great use of podcasts today. It's one of the beneficial things to having shows like yours and different things that you can go back, kind of talk about it. Mags, to be truthful, I considered myself kind of a weird wrestling historian. So if I rewind it back a little bit and I go to that new generation era, I remember as a kid, one of my favorite things to do every weekend, you get a good, test grade or report card, something good would happen, right? Or you stayed out of trouble. One of my favorite things was we would go to Blockbuster. I don't know if you guys have that over there across the pond, yeah. But Blockbuster video rental store. So what I would do is I could always get a video game and like two movies or whatever, whatever my dad said that week. And maybe it was one and one, whatever. Make sure you rewind the tape. What a crock that was now, right? If you ever paid fees on that. Okay, buddy. But I would always get the old wrestling VHS cassette tapes. I loved them. So I would go back and I would watch stuff from – so I would always do it like in eras. So I would go back to 1989 first and I'm like, oh, let me watch the Survivor Series from that year. Let me go back to 88 and see – well, Macho Man was a good guy. I didn't know that. How did he – what happened with him and Hogan? How did he become the Macho King? Oh, he turned on Hogan. There wasn't a computer to go to type in everything and you knew it back. Yeah. So you would just go in and try to put all the pieces together. Oh, I didn't know the guy from Friday was in pro wrestling. Oh, that's Debo, and it's Zeus that you come to find out. You're like, that's really cool that they did all that. Where was Hogan during this time period? Oh, he was making that Rocky movie. You just learned all these things. And that's where I got my appreciation for some of the old school WCW stuff as well. Watching some of the old Starcades that they had there. My videotape range selection wasn't huge, but it was enough that you could get a big section of pro wrestling from WWF and WCW into your mind.
Yeah, we were exactly the same. We had two big video rental companies here. We had Blockbuster and we had a company called Variety Video, and I was the same. I'd go and rent these wrestling events. With my gran, she used to record every wrestling show religiously. So we'd get like Superstars, we'd get Wrestling Challenge, we'd get All American Wrestling, kind of all that, the clip and variety shows. So she'd record them and then she'd hook up two video recorders together and do a copy from like tape to tape. So we end up like essentially tape trading with my own grandma.
The original tape traders, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then it was after I was out of wrestling now, and then I had a decade of wrestling to catch up on. That's when I started collecting Blu-rays and DVDs of stuff that I'd missed. I fell back into it hard, really, really hard.
Nothing wrong with that, though. I mean, that's just part of being a fan when it comes to pro wrestling. And fans today, everybody spends all their time complaining about stuff sometimes on social media. We have to remember, too, that these are part of the ebbs and flows. And sometimes that's what makes it even better when someone gets their push or the rise to the top, too.
Yeah, and it kind of gives me as well a different perspective to a lot of wrestling fans. For an example, everybody's high on CM Punk. A lot of people are high on CM Punk. They want him to come back. And I miss that old era. So I don't have that kind of emotional connection with Punk. So it's interesting to see how people are so attached to this character that I am very nonchalant about.
Yeah. See, I love CM Punk. And there was something really special with him. But like I said, there's probably more questions that go into it for later on, but I began to fall in love with a lot of different pro wrestling too because of it. Ring of Honor. Actually, you could probably see it live. Those are all mostly wrestling DVDs and stuff behind me here for the most part. And I got some up there too that are like too big to fit in, but they're all in like alphabetical order. You go through, we got the Hitman collection, whatever it may be. I was big on collecting the DVDs. The wrestling video games I absolutely love too.
Yeah.
So yeah, that stuff helps with keeping your fandom alive.
Definitely. And with the WWE Network now, it's all there at the touch of a button. You can literally find wrestling from 20, 30, 40 years ago on there.
Could you imagine having that as a kid? No. Oh my Lord, I would have never went to bed.
And it's interesting to see how much like wrestling Twitter for mainly complains about wrestling nowadays. And you look back to when we were kids, you got what you were given. If you didn't like it, there was no other option. Now you can watch 100 different companies at the touch of a button and people are still finding stuff to complain about it. But that absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah, that's a really wild thing for fans today. It's nice though. I mean, as a kid, I was able to get WCW though. I had TBS, TNT. And I remember even before Nitro was even a thing, I could watch WCW Saturday Night. I call that the era of no girls for me. So I was a kid though. So you would like basically sit at home Saturday nights and I would watch pro wrestling. Like I said, sit there with the action figures and reenact the matches and everything else. But it was cool to see like wrestling in the South, you know, like, oh, tonight's going to be Stunning Steve Austin versus Sting in the main event for the television title. Yeah. And that got me to appreciate different styles, other people, where I'm like, hey, that'd be really cool if we got to see, you know, Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes go in there and face like the Quebecers maybe, or, you know, you just start thinking of fantasy matchups too.
Yeah. WCW was another one that it was damn near impossible to get hold of in Britain. We got a 1 hour a week clip show called Worldwide, and it was on at such a ridiculous time on like this tiny TV station that very few people, if any, watched it. And I remember it being hosted by a very young Eric Bischoff, and it was literally just clips of matches.
Yeah, just spliced together basically for it. We used to get Worldwide. That was their like morning show, but Saturday Night was like their big show. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they knew they had to compete, which is part of the Monday Night Wars and everything else that led to that spark when I was a preteen.
So what would you say is your favorite ever wrestling show or your favorite ever wrestling pay-per-view?
WrestleMania 17. I think is my favorite wrestling pay-per-view of all time. It encapsulates what being a wrestling fan is all about. The opening match is Chris Jericho versus William Regal, a nice wrestling match between a charismatic young Chris Jericho versus, I wouldn't even say he was old, but
a veteran.
Another thing I miss in pro wrestling is how wrestlers used to look like they were like 35 or 38 years old for like their entire career. William, who knows how old he was, or Arn Anderson.
Arn Anderson's been 40 year old for like 25 years.
He doesn't even look that much different from how he used to look even today. But they were just great. And I love that WrestleMania 17 show. It brought back so many different things. I even love one of my favorite wrestlers from the Attitude Era, Mags, is Test. Mm-hmm. So, Mags, did I ever do any contest for, like, anything for my podcast? You're probably going to know a lot of the answers. So, Test, one of my favorites, he fought Eddie Guerrero in, like, an opening, like, second or third match. That's how stacked the roster was back then. Yeah. The gimmick Battle Royal, I hold fond memories of that. I'm a huge Kamala fan. A lot of people don't know that. I did donate to Kamala when he was going to lose his house. I wanted to make sure he kept it. He's one of my favorites. Love seeing him in there, Kim Chi. Bobby the Brain Heenan and Mean Gene Okerlund on commentary brought me back to my days as a kid. And this is in 2001. I think I'm about to go into high school almost for the first time. Like, I'm in my final year of eighth grade. And I was just on the highest point of life at that point. I'm a starter on the basketball team. I'm getting ready to go into high school. Life is good. And they bring me back to my childhood, and I'm already really young. And I'm like, this is so cool to see the Iron Sheik and these guys back again. So cool. And then you get the TLC match that Josh and Kevin did an excellent job on their podcast, Wrestling Reverb, recapping that from Mania to Mania. And I love that TLC match. The Hardy Boys were also two of my favorites. Edge getting that moment with the spear off the ladder. That's my favorite TLC out of all of them, is TLC 2 at WrestleMania 17. And the biggest match, Mags, the one that I'm sure I could recite the entire promo for, the package even.
Yeah.
Stone Cold Steve Austin wins. He knocks Kane out in the Royal Rumble with the steel chair, and he says he's going to WrestleMania. Rock beats Kurt Angle. They set up everything. Limp Bizkit, My Way. Limp Bizkit was one of my favorite groups back then. Fred Durst is probably part of the reason why I started to learn how to rap, if you want to call it that, spit lyrics, and just wild, man. And I just remember that video package of I don't care if Deborah's my manager. It wasn't up to me, with the sit down with Jim Ross. And I remember the toast with the beers, and they're hitting the cans back and forth, and the beer is going everywhere. And there can only be one World Wrestling Federation champion, Rock, and it's going to be me. With all due respect. And I could just hear the whole thing play out in the back of my head. And it was just like the ultimate match of It was like our generation's Hogan and Warrior, like two of the biggest baby faces were going to clash, and nobody knew what was going to happen because Stone Cold was out, Rock was in there, and things just got wild in that match, and we all know how that ended with it was a cool ending for that night, but that was something that was a bad idea in the long term.
Yeah, you said it perfectly. It was such a popular answer when people come on this show, and it's for good reason. It was literally the pay-per-view of that generation. It was the one show that you would always point to as that's what the Attitude Era was about.
And you know what, Mags? Another good point is Shane McMahon and the WCW storyline had just happened, too, right before that.
Yeah.
So you had WCW guys coming. It was just a great time to be a fan. It was like the peak of that era, that moment.
Yeah.
And it was just everything was all right there for you to just see in front of you.
Pretty much lightning in a bottle.
Yes, yes.
You couldn't have scripted it to go that perfectly.
Yeah, and I feel like, and you know what? It's crazy while we're talking. I feel bad that I'm leaving matches out. Like, I forgot to bring up Trish and Stephanie's involvement into the main event. Linda McMahon, Triple H, and The Undertaker. We can go on and on and on for these matches. Even Right to Censor and the APA and Taz. The hardcore title being defended. You can go through all of that stuff, but I'm telling you, that card from top to bottom is magnificent.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those shows that you could watch every week without fail and still absolutely enjoy every second of it.
Yes.
So you, like I mentioned in the intro, you are a gold standard in this game that we're in, this content creation game. And it means that you have to watch a lot of wrestling. What current wrestling products are you watching?
I watch a lot of different things. So I'm going to probably be one of the hipsters, but I watch everything. The name is Everything Pro Wrestling, so I feel like I have to be kind of caught up on everything for the most part. It's very difficult now. If I could go back knowing what was going to happen in pro wrestling, if I knew what was going to happen, I would have not chosen the name Everything Pro Wrestling because it is very tough to watch all of this, and it consumes me sometimes. So I have to it's kind of like eating too much. I have to know when to push myself away from the table and go do something else or figure out something else to watch or do. And I love AEW right now. That's one of my favorites. Another one that I think is a real gem is NWA. Their YouTube show is fantastic. A one-hour show is perfect because if it's too long, it's not really too long. And if it's too short, it's not really too short. You get just enough of it. So whether it's good, bad, or ugly, it's only an hour. That's great. So I love those two products are probably my favorites right now.
Yep. Great picks. AEW has been an absolute phenomenon. And I don't think it gets enough credit for how short of a company that it's been around. I mean, we're talking about a company that's less than a year old in terms of producing content, and they just hitting it out of the park. Obviously, there is some issues with production and some of the storylines are not quite hitting it. But for a company less than a year old, I think they're doing absolutely phenomenally.
Same. I really am surprised how much I've taken Cody Rhodes, too. He just became one of my favorites and someone I kind of – it sounds weird to say this, but someone who I admire. We're almost the same age, but – Cody just has this drive and intensity about it. And I think out of all of the EVPs, he has taken to the role the most. And I just, there's a twinkle in his eye that he loves doing the behind the scenes stuff more than everyone else. He's just got it. Maybe it was in his blood from his father, Dusty Rhodes, but he's really shown up for this.
Yep, absolutely. I can honestly say, and I've said this quite a few times on different podcasts, he was never one of my favorite wrestlers. I always enjoyed his work, but he never did anything that kind of stood out and like put himself like above anyone in my eyes. But he took that chance on himself. He bet on himself, and I cannot fault him as a businessman. As a businessman, he is absolutely on point. And since he's been in AEW, I've grown to really enjoy his character work.
I would agree with that. I love the nuances that they come back to and they bring up with their storylines and everything else. Even the things like the Nightmare Collective. I like how Brandy said she never had a head injury. And they did that video recently where it shows like Cody crashing into her when someone pulled Brandy into the way. And that's ever since then, she hasn't managed Cody because he thought she was in harm's way. And now she's kind of went into this different thing. And we're still waiting to see how a lot of these storylines play out, but I love it. And I want to add one other thing for the NWA. Another person I admire is Billy Corgan and his hustle and his work ethic. Because when you look at someone like Billy Corgan, if you remember Mags, he got burned really bad at Impact Wrestling, TNA, whatever you want to call it. He really should have said, I will never do anything in the wrestling business again. I hate this stuff. I'm done with it. I can't believe that I even thought this was going to work. That would be a normal person's response, and I would not fault him for saying something like that. He lost his battle in court. Dixie got the victory. But Billy Corgan still said, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it as best I can the way I want to do it. And he eventually took over the NWA name, and look what it's become.
Yeah, and to go even deeper into it, it was a dead brand.
Yes.
It was nobody was using the title to any kind of importance, and he took that company, which was pretty much worthless, and he's now made it into one of the hottest programs in our wrestling sphere.
And I love the fact that they've built it on the back of Nick Aldis, the former Magnus, if you guys don't know. I think he has been a tremendous performer. I loved his title reign while he was in TNA, and I thought he was phenomenal. And I can't believe more people had never picked him up, and I could never figure out why. But at the end of the day, where he's at now makes it all worth it. He really is the shining light of the NWA, and I love what he's doing with Strictly Business, everything else. I love the way he carries himself as a champion. He reminds me of the Harley Races, Ric Flairs. He's in that category with them at this point.
Yeah, and the thing with NWA and the show that they put out is it's such a great callback to wrestling of a generation a long, long time ago. In this kind of era of wrestling we've got now, it's so hard to like make a mark and be like and stand out. There's that many wrestling promotions, and NWA have come along and with like the way they harken back to the NWA of old with the start time and the studio and the way that the matches are set out and the interviews. It's refreshing. It's something old, but it seems so new.
Yes, I love the live audience being there. And to me, the promotion is really based on your promo skills. You got the Rock and Roll Express. I don't even want to guess how old those dudes are. But they're still out there wrestling, man. Ricky Morton looks like he can move better than me some days. So I got to give it up to the Rock and Roll Express for still being on the show. I love their use of legends. Even people like Trevor Murdoch, C.W. Anderson. It's just good to see those dudes back in here, you know?
Yeah.
And the last thing I want to kind of bring up when it comes to the NWA is even their style in the ring. I'm glad sometimes to watch wrestling without seeing a tope suicida in every match or a super kick. Do you know what I mean? I don't mean that even in a bad way to people who wrestle today. I know that's the style, but sometimes it's less is more.
Yeah, it's refreshing. It's something different.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with this influx of new wrestling, obviously being spearheaded with AEW, the big boys, the WWE had to counter program it. How do you think that NXT has gone from being a network exclusive show to being basically the competitor to these new challenges of AEW and the like?
I love NXT. Let me say that first and foremost. To be honest, NXT is one of the few things that has held my interest in WWE over the past few years. I'm going to say that. I think they have put on the best shows. I think they have outshined the main roster 9 times out of 10 for most of their pay-per-views. And sometimes I don't even think the main roster is even on their radar for the stories they tell and everything else. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa's story alone to me is one of my favorite, like, top 5 WWE stories ever. With that being said, though, I think NXT lost a little bit of its luster because of that 1-hour format that I talked about. when it was only an hour, okay, I missed it. Quick catch up. That's fine. Now I'm playing catch up the next day. Usually, like tomorrow, I'll watch. We're recording this on a Wednesday. Tomorrow, I'll watch NXT. And it's very difficult sometimes for me to stick with it because there's some parts that you're like, oh, you can tell this is just filler a little bit. And you don't want to compare it to the old one, but it's still good. It's still really good. They build their superstars up tremendously. And I love how they're showcasing them more on a bigger stage now. I.e. the Rhea Ripley, Charlotte Flair stuff that we're starting to see, probably getting ready to go into WrestleMania season with as well. Well worth it.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a first world problem to have, really, that we've got so much good wrestling that not having the time or finding these little things to pick at it's almost like we're spoiled as wrestling fans.
100%, 100%, and it's just a lot for me to keep up with too, just to try to stick with all of it. And that's just the stateside stuff. We didn't talk about, like, I know me and you, we both watch New Japan Pro Wrestling. I love New Japan, but it's just sometimes so hard to keep up with the shows. I'm like, what time does that show start? Oh, 2 a.m. And I always tell people, don't complain, because the UK fans and fans from everywhere else, they have it way worse than us. If I have to sit up one night for Wrestle Kingdom, you're not going to hear complaints out of me. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah, we have it for WWE events that they're usually they started earlier recently. It's usually about 11 at night they start, but for instance, for Royal Rumble, it didn't finish till like 4 a.m. here. And obviously, me being a UFC fan as well, we've got that. And that they don't start till 3 o'clock in the morning over here as well. So, yeah, we have it pretty rough here. So it kind of tickles me when you see wrestling Twitter going ape because they have to be up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch Wrestle Kingdom. And I'm here at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning after a really good sleep and able to watch it. Yeah,
it's fun. Yes. Yeah, so, that is so true.
So let's get on to your content creation. What was the genesis of Everything Pro Wrestling? What was the kind of spark that made you want to go from being just a fan of wrestling to wanting to create content and getting your voice out there about wrestling?
I would say it's two things that kind of sparked it. I'm trying to think of which one came first. All right. So we'll go with podcast influence. A long, long, long time ago, I was listening to a podcast. Now, this is probably one of the very first ones that I even remember hearing about before Dave and all of them like made theirs public to where people could hear them. And I'm talking about Uncle Dave, Dave Meltzer, and Brian Alvarez and all them. It was the Sala Monster Sounds Off. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Yeah.
But the Sala Monster was on SE Scoops at the time. And I used to love a show called The Pro Wrestling Report with Damian Nelson, the man they call Meathead. And they would always have various people. Frank would be on there, Dave Hero. These guys were doing shows every week, and you would go to their website to see things. And, you know, I won Fan of the Week and stuff for there. You go to the website, check out their contests, whatever they're running. And I was just doing this while in college, just starting college. And I'm like, oh, I got to keep up on wrestling. This is a great show to keep up with the news and what's happening. And they bring some, you know, some comedy to it, add some flair. So there would be links to click, like, whatever the news was at the time. Big spoiler tonight on Monday Night Raw, Edge is going to be doing something spectacular, whatever. And those links would link you to SEScoops.com. So that became one of my favorite websites because it was reliable news. Well, Sala Monster's friends with Webmaster Mikey, as he calls him, and they had a show on there. So the Sala Monster Sounds Off. So from episode one, I am a day one listener to the Sala Monster Sounds Off podcast. And I always just appreciated his knowledge, and me and him line up on a lot of things. There's things that we disagree about, obviously, but he always was kind of my inspiration. He always had a level head, went in unbiased, and kind of just said, hey, this is what I think of it, and this is why you should listen to me about it. And Sala Monster's just great. He's just a regular fan like me. And I thought that was a huge thing for it. And actually, at WrestleMania 33, I got the chance to meet him. So it was very cool to meet the Silent Monster. And he was like, oh, my, yeah, you've written me emails. And he knew a lot of stuff about me just from knowing my name and hearing me. So I thought that was really cool to have the opportunity to meet him. And the other thing was I used to be into a wrestling eFed, which you guys can find on Twitter, XGWFed. XGW, we started that probably around 2008, I want to say. You know, you go around, I was bored in college at the time, pretty good at wrestling video games. My hands were still, you know, able to move really fast, press the buttons on the controller. So I was like, let me see if I can make some fun out of these games, because they were starting to lose their appeal to me a little bit. I'm like, this isn't really as fun. I'd like to do something more competitive as far as gaming goes. So we found some leagues. The first one was kind of meh. You went in and out. We're like, that's boring. And then we found one that we really liked called NEW. And a bunch of guys were on there. And it was fun. We met up with them. But then eventually, after a little bit of time went by, their site kind of went down. And you would kind of role play out the stories, you know, type them up. And you got to use your creative juices in this one. So you and someone else will come up with the story, go back and forth with whoever wins and loses, and you would come up with things. So this is where your creativity gets to come in and mess with this stuff. And like I said, as a kid, I always wanted to play out the matches, set up my own King of the Ring tournament. And I think that I would be a better booker half the time than everyone else, because we're all wrestling fans and we think that, right? So that is eventually how I got into it. And XGW went on to continue from we went from the video game SmackDown versus Raw 2009 up until, I want to say, WWE 2K18. Wow. If I'm not mistaken, we went years. And eventually the time had just come to where we weren't attracting new people. And I think it was just because we were all getting older. We didn't speak the same lingo as the kids anymore. And it was just kind of like, it was a different world to us. They were speaking foreign languages. We didn't understand how they wanted to play the game more so. So we couldn't adapt anymore to it. And we were all getting older with our side projects. And everything pro wrestling had launched by then. Everything pro wrestling started after I finished my master's degree in college. That was the only thing holding it up, because for years before that, I wanted to create this content, and I wish that I would have done it beforehand now, because I think it would have been something a lot more than it is. But I'm still grateful that I get the opportunity to speak to great people like you guys who do it as well. The whole Brainbuster crew was something that really helped me continue producing my stuff, but I guess we'll get into that in a second. But that's how it all started, though.
Yeah, I've always said that you were like a big inspiration for me, because you strive to improve with every single episode. So what is it that motivates you to keep improving? What is it that motivates you to keep producing like better and better content?
It's wild. I would like to say that it's you guys too in the wrestling community, especially all the people on wrestling Twitter. There's so many good content creators. I always compare myself to you guys, and I'm like, I gotta be better at this. And sometimes I try to be a perfectionist, even with like the little audio things, or I flip out if somebody opens up a door while I'm recording. You know, all the little things as a podcast that you're like, come on, dude, you had to do that right then and there. But it's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. But you guys are part of the reason. The whole Brainbuster Radio crew is one of the main things. So I'm very thankful that Will started up that group, because some of you guys I knew and some of you I didn't know beforehand. I was familiar with you, Josh, a little bit. But I got to meet Queen, JPQ, so many people. And even... some of the other guys we had, they're the ringsiders now.
But WrestleThoughts.
WrestleThoughts, yes. They were in a completely different realm. They were really doing big things, and I wanted to kind of get into that. And I'm like, I don't know if it's based on their location. How are they getting interviews with guys from NXT UK? Like, this is amazing. And I felt like I was a step below you guys, and I'm like, man, I really hope so. And you know how when it first started, how people initially – don't know this, but I wasn't a part of the original lineup for it. Mm-hmm. We had other people in there. We had Fowl, we had Omega Luke, and these guys are all tremendous. And I didn't know if I was going to stack up against them. And when I was told no, it kind of lit a fire under me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no, not right now. You're not the one. So it lit a fire under me, and I went out and I just started busting out content left and right because I felt like I needed the Brain Buster thing to help me out. And I started doing crazy things, and I went out and I got an interview with Marty the Moth Martinez, or Martin Casaus, and he did an interview for me for free. He was really nice about it, and it was because of his Twitch channel. We were just both gamers. We would talk on there all the time, and he was so cool and gracious to do that for me. And I think that interview really impressed some of you guys. I don't know what happened behind the scenes with it, and it doesn't matter at this point. But right before the launch, I was asked, hey, do you want to come in and join? You got to switch your day to this day, but do you want it? And I wanted it so bad that I would have took any day that was offered to me. So I was like, yeah, I'm in. And I felt like, yes, I'm in an elite group, and it felt really cool. And then you get to know people like Smart to Death, everyone else who's not involved, Super Kicking It with Kelsey. The names, I could go on and on, and if I didn't say yours, I apologize. RJ from Ringside Rant, Get Your Podcast. Like I said, I'll be here all day naming them. So don't feel offended if I don't name you. But those guys, I've met all of them from this too, and it's so dope to just interact with podcasters and just hear some of the great concepts. Like, I love your Badlands concept. That is probably one of the best in the community, Mags. I have to give it up to you for that.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate that. I remember vividly when Brainbuster was forming, and like I said, you weren't part of the Wolf's original choices. And I don't know whether it was just because I was the kind of like elder statesman of the group or not, but I do remember him on the day he was finalising his lineup. He was in the DMs with me, and he was saying, "I've got Conrad on, and I want him on the team. I want him on the team, but I don't know if he's going to be the right kind of fit. And I've told him no, and I don't know where we're going to fit him in. I think I've made a bad choice." And it was, get him involved. And we were between me and Wolf, and I don't know if he was talking with any of the other members or not. But me and Wolf were literally juggling days and times because he wanted to keep Queen and put together on a Wednesday. So it ended up being, I think we first started on a Saturday originally, and then we ended up moving so we could bring you in. I think Badlands ended up being on like three different days altogether, because we then did the same thing with Headlock Talk. We kind of like shuffled around to move them in. So I know that he wanted you in from the off. It was just finding that kind of spot for you, and I'm so grateful that he did, because like I said, you said that we like kind of push you to be better, but you did the same to us, and it was kind of like that, like the tide raises all ships kind of thing, where we're working together with guys like you, with guys like Pup and Queen and all these people. We all got better at doing it, if you understand what I mean.
No, I 100% get it. It was just a kind of who's who of independent podcasting. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that we chase for clout and everything else, and to me, that's not what matters at all. No. I could sit here every Monday Night Raw and kind of crap on it and Twitter to get followers, but I choose not to do that. I try to always kind of keep it professional and remain professional in some of it. And I still even think to this day, I say some stuff that I'm like, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. You can't bite your tongue for every single thing. But like I've always said, in my Twitter bio, it says I'm a wrestling opinionist. I'm not a journalist. I am not somebody who you should be taking serious. I don't know if I should even be critiquing matches. But I tell you from a fan's perspective. And I think it's hard for a lot of fans to get their voice heard. And that's why I came up with the slogan, by the fans, for the fans, similar to yours that you have for this podcast. I wanted people to get involved, and I kind of want to hear their sides of pro wrestling, their mm-hmm. sides of the story. Because even if you disagree with me, I want to hear what you think still. And I think that I can communicate that and do that in a respectful way, to where fans will at least appreciate it without you having to donate money to my YouTube channel or to my PayPal or forcing you to buy a shirt or something. All I ask for is support, and you'll have your voice heard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the more unique things about podcasts, and yours especially, the fact that it's not just a by the numbers kind of podcast. You do give your opinion, and it's not robotic and it's not scripted. It's just how you feel about the product that you're watching or the product that you've just watched.
Yeah, I like to do everything live for the most part. I think it comes off more genuine. It captures the moment, and I appreciate that. It's kind of like watching Monday Night Raw. What's one of the favorite things about watching live wrestling? Anything can happen. I could be sitting here recording right now, and someone could bust through the door, and maybe I'll leave it in, maybe I won't, you know? like on the live recording yesterday, my wife had to come in for a second to get something, and I just left it in there, and I'm like, what are you doing? We're live. And then I just look right back at the camera. I'm like, well, things happen. And then we get right back into it, you know?
Wow. So what was the defining decision about picking YouTube as your main medium over the regular kind of Podbean or SoundCloud kind of outlets?
It's weird, man. I'm a business major, but I have so many like ethics that I never want to rip people off. I would honestly rather make an honest living than to rip people off and be mega rich. I don't know why. And it's probably part of the reason why maybe I'm not the greatest businessman when you think about it. But it came down to numbers and everything else. So when I first started, everything was on YouTube at first. And we would just kind of record these episodes. And if you guys know my other YouTube channel, you can actually see the pilot for Everything Pro Wrestling. I don't think I have it hidden right now as private, but it's kind of one of those like trial by errors, and it's so bad that it's good. At least that's what a lot of people tell me, like, don't block this, bro, please. I always have to come back to this. So, yeah, you can see like the trial for it, and you can see how I started to formulate it. I used to use Google Hangouts, everything else. And the original idea of the show was to get people who were fans to come on. Similar to how Fowl brings people on for his shows, exact same concept. I would have people come on, join me on Google Hangouts, and we'll talk about the week in pro wrestling. And I used to pick like 1 to 3 topics and say, hey, what do you think about this going on in WWE? And WrestleMania is coming up and the Royal Rumble, et cetera, et cetera. And then it turned into my numbers aren't doing too well. And you get inside your own head. Even this week, I was inside my own head throughout. I'm like, man, I'm not as good as these guys. And it just happens, I think, to all podcasters when you really start to wrap your brain around this too much. And you start getting in your own head like, man, how do I get better? So I got into my own head, took a little bit of a break, and I'm trying to figure out how can I make this better. I'm still producing videos here and there, but how can I make this better? And I saw Anchor. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, free podcasting host medium. So I'm like, this is pretty cool. I didn't have enough confidence in myself to pay money to be on Podbean. It was a very tough thing to try to think of, deal with. So I said, Anchor's free. I can sink or swim. Let's see how I do. I went on there and I recorded a WrestleMania review similar to the one that I had recorded with Rob. But this one was just me talking to my cell phone. It sounds absolutely awful looking back at it now, but a lot of people went back and listened to it. It did great numbers, and I said, oh, okay, let's try this again. So then it turned into, I like doing this, just the podcast version of these, and it was going great, good, 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 good. And I got an email one day. I was getting sponsorships through Anchor, making money from Anchor, everything. And it turned really bad for me at one point when – I got an email saying basically that the numbers were inflated for everybody. One of those podcast machines had got into it, and our numbers weren't as high as we thought they were. Mm-hmm. So this is part of the reason why I tell people now, you can't always look at the numbers, because I thought I was producing great content. And now that I heard that about the numbers, it hurt my heart, my soul. And I'm like, oh, these are garbage shows, man. Now, these aren't even real. I don't know how many of these people were actually listening, but I'm watching Twitter followers go up, interaction go up. And at the same time, my YouTube channel is slowly growing. I never thought about it. Some videos would get, at that point, I was probably saying like 60 to 70 views. And all of a sudden, I'd have one here or there that would shoot up to, you know, 600, 900. And I'm like, wow, I'm feeling really good about this. And you're just battling. There's the internal conflict of back and forth. And this is during the whole, I need to get on Brainbuster. I don't know what I'm doing anymore with my stuff. And then because of you guys, when we were setting up everything for our charity that we were going to do on Twitch, when we were doing our charity stream, JPQ got some stuff. And I looked at it. And I'm like, this looks really sharp. I should do this for my YouTube show. And I reached out to someone who does JD from New York. Salrex, and I asked Salrex, hey, can you produce some overlays for me? Because I had someone do them and they looked all right, but they weren't the quality of Salrex. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He has really top quality stuff. And I started using that stuff and I noticed the numbers climbing, climbing, climbing. And I started getting more support from people who were in the Facebook group and they're like, dude, you got to do a show. Like, I think I didn't do a Monday Night Raw. And this is where it started to hit me in my soul a little bit. Dude, you're not doing Monday Night Raw tonight? And I'm like, nah, man, not tonight. And they're like, come on, man, you got to do Monday Night Raw. It's a great show, blah, blah, blah. And I want to hear your thoughts. You got to tell me if it's good or bad so I can know if I have to watch. So I'm like, I have to suffer. So you need to know if Raw's good or bad. So, but it's weird when people start to count on your shows, Mags. You know what I mean? I'm sure you have plenty of people same way with the podcast. If Mags, if your Badlands did not go up on the chair shot, or if Why We Watch did not go up on time, there's people asking you questions. Everything all right? Yeah. You good? What's going on, man? Where's your show?
You're spot on. You're exactly spot on.
And it's very weird that we all care about each other so much that if the show isn't happening, you start to look and question things. Like at first, I didn't see JPQ's show today, and I was about to send him a message, and then it went up, and I'm like, oh, okay, he's good. He's good. There it is. That's what I needed in my soul.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just it's a cool feeling to start to like pick up the fan base a little bit. Because you got to remember those times to where people only had – my Facebook group had 100 people. Now it's at 600 people. Wow. It's a slow climb, but it's something lovely to, like, start to see that stuff build up.
Yeah. And it's good from an outsider's point of view, from my point of view, because I've got to know you so well, and I've been a big listener of all your content. It's good to see you getting that kind of traction and getting those kind of views. For me, from a personal point of view, I've never been interested in the view count. We used to get the analytics from Wilf about what listens we got and what downloads we got on YouTube and stuff like that, and it never really interested me. I do the shows because I find them fun. I find them interesting. And when I start to not like doing them, that's probably when I'll kind of wrap it up. But it's good from me because I listen to a lot of podcasts. I like to see guys like yourself and like to see guys like JPQ and Queen and Josh all really thrive because you put in so much work. You're so dedicated that you deserve this. You deserve the success. And it's good. It brings a smile to my face to see you doing so well.
Yeah, it's a I treat it like this with the numbers. When you're looking at all of it, it's great to use the data to your advantage, see what's working, what's not working. But you can't live and die by the numbers. I have to tell myself that even when I get into these little funks, you can't live and die by the numbers. Last night I was hurt because I looked at my numbers and they started off really low. People were probably busy because by the time I woke up today, I looked at the numbers for the video. They're right where I needed them to be, right at the mark where I set for myself. And you can't get down on yourself too quick. I think we just want everything so fast sometimes, especially in the U.S. Yeah. We want everything in a New York minute, and it doesn't always work that way. And whether it does or doesn't, it doesn't matter. If you're having fun talking, this could be us just talking without the microphones on, and I would absolutely love just talking pro wrestling with you because yeah, it's absolutely one of the things I love.
And if Paul was involved, he wouldn't have a microphone on anyway. Well, I've absolutely loved speaking with you, comrade. You know that you are a massive inspiration. I can't say it enough. What I'd like to do after the question and answer segment, I like to do a little bit of word association, throw some words or phrases from this wacky world of pretend farting at you and see basically what's the first thing that comes to mind. How does that sound? Right, so we will go with one that I've gone with first quite a few times now. We'll go with Vince McMahon.
How do I want to? Visionary.
Yep, absolutely. Do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Yes. I think Vince McMahon is a visionary for what he thought pro wrestling could be once he took over in the I think it was the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Once he took over the WWF from his father, I think Vince McMahon is a genius. I know a lot of people say he ruined pro wrestling. He got rid of the territory system. yes, but Vince McMahon had an eye for television is the new future. This is what is going to be happening. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that he's so smart for what he did. He took all the best talents and brought them to his company and then put them where he would peg them. And then he eventually put all of his stock in on one guy, Hulk Hogan, and it really paid off for him. So as a businessman, I think he had the vision. As a person who now is probably known very well politically wherever he goes, Vince McMahon is a visionary, and even in his old age, you still see glimmers of it when you hear about how well a segment did on WWE Raw or SmackDown, whatever. He got a $1 billion deal from Fox. Yeah, think about absolutely. Who would have ever thought that you could watch wrestling on one of the biggest cable stations and people could watch it for free even if you don't have cable? He's been on USA Network. He has Raw, NXT. The guy has thought of so many things and done so many things. I know we're quick to try to tear him down too, but we have to remember the good that he's brought to pro wrestling. And he's probably a major reason why most of us are fans initially.
Yep, absolutely. And I think visionary was the perfect word. I mean, you look at the things that he's brought to wrestling. Like I said, we do kind of like shit on him from a great art because of our kind of feelings about how he's treated the wrestling business. But we wouldn't have wrestling on national TV. We wouldn't have a national promotions. We wouldn't have pay-per-view. We wouldn't have a net streaming. We wouldn't have networks because of Vince's vision of having like wrestling being an entertainment. Go on.
Have you ever been to a WrestleMania?
I've never, ever been to a WrestleMania. Never.
You go to a WrestleMania. Think about this for a second. Imagine going to a sports stadium. You guys have the big soccer matches over there, right? What do your stadiums usually hold?
The biggest ones are like 70,000 to 80,000 people.
Imagine going to one of those. And you can fill it up any type of way with chairs on the floor, everything else. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing but wrestling fans there who are just like you, rabid fans going crazy at even some of the smallest things. That is what WrestleMania is like. The man sells out football stadium-filled wrestling events.
Yeah, and now it's over multiple days as well because you have a NXT and then you have the Raw and the SmackDown afterwards. And now this talks of a two-day WrestleMania, and not only that, it's the economy that a WrestleMania brings. It can breathe life to a town.
Yes, people are bidding on it just to get the opportunity to get some of that money.
Yeah, and how many other companies who are not even affiliated with WWE build their season around WrestleMania?
Yeah. You know, some people know just to either stay away or piggyback off of it to make money, too.
Yeah, exactly. So next we will go with Vince's heir apparent, Mr. Triple H.
Ooh. Is it one word answers only for this?
Whatever comes to mind.
Love-hate. Love-hate Triple H.
Okay.
Elaborate?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. I love Triple H from his days of Terror Rising in WCW.
Wow. You might be the only one.
Well, here's the thing. I didn't like him as Terror Rising, but I thought that the person under what he was doing had something. I could see it.
Yeah.
You know, you've been watching wrestling long enough. You kind of see an eye for talent. And even as a kid, I was always looking like, he's really good. I like him. And Triple H was one of those guys. So you look at him, and I loved him as Hunter Hearst Helmsley. I felt bad that he got punished for all that click stuff, but that stuff ended up helping make him. My hate comes from Triple H's power that eventually got associated with him. He ended up marrying Stephanie McMahon, dating the boss's daughter, left China kind of in a rude, abrupt way, if you believe how everything is said, how it went down. That's Triple H's prerogative. He wasn't married to her. I get it. But would Triple H be, what is he, a 14 or 15-time world heavyweight champion?
I think would he's 14, yeah.
Would he be that many times as a world heavyweight champion if he wasn't married to Stephanie?
Well, that's very, very true.
And I think back to those the Raws where Triple H would just beat everybody. I remember watching Kane lose to him. Rob Van Dam, Booker T. And I'm like, so none of those guys were good enough? Goldberg beat him, and then he beat him right back. And I'm like, none of these guys were good enough. Benoit beat him, then Orton beat him, and then Triple H took the belt right back again. And I just couldn't believe it during that time period. The Reign of Terror is what it's called. And it was just like, oh, dude, come on. And you got this disdain for him a little bit. And he went away for a while. He would come back and do his matches. But then once Triple H got into more of an executive role, cut down the hair, and he started to run NXT, it became a thing of beauty. And he started producing some of the best television that I love. So it went from like, you know, I like the guy, I hate the guy, to, you know what, Triple H ain't so bad. I wouldn't mind seeing him being in charge because he knows what he's doing. So, yeah, it's just a weird relationship I have with Triple H, but I do think that he is he has a great mind for pro wrestling, one of the best.
Yeah, and looking back at him in those terrorizing and the Blue Bud days, you would never have pinned him to be the person who potentially would have the finger on the pulse of wrestling and would be the person who could potentially be in charge of the biggest company in the whole industry.
My money would have been on the guy who beat him at Starrcade, Alex Wright, baby. Like, you never
out of that. That's Wunderkind.
Yes, I was a big Alex Wright fan, actually, too.
Wow. So next, we will go with, what is your thoughts on factions, wrestling factions?
Absolutely love them if they are done right. We have so many iconic factions. And if I had to associate a word with them, I would say, if done right, great. Bullet Club, D-Generation X, the Nation of Domination, the Four Horsemen. You can go on and on. I think I mentioned the Bullet Club, LIJ. You can Chaos. Go through all of these factions. Who'd you just throw out there?
Chaos,
yes. Will Ospreay and Okada tearing it up. You can go through any of the names for factions, though. I think they are a great thing if used properly in pro wrestling. So I love factions.
Yeah, I'm all about factions. Especially love the Survivor Series that they had, Deadly Games, where it was a faction-based event. Yeah, I really miss factions, especially in WWE, because obviously that's the big product. That's the product that most wrestling fans know. And to a lot of wrestling fans, that is wrestling. They don't kind of see New Japan, or they don't kind of see AEW. Faction wrestling is something that's kind of gone by the wayside there. I mean, I know it's coming back now with the likes of Imperium and the likes of the Undisputed Era, and that's, for me, is only a good thing. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, me too. It's something that was a great art that during the Attitude Era got a lot of people on TV too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So next we will go with, what are your thoughts on women wrestling?
Better than ever for where it's been for women's wrestling. They've come a long way, and they changed my mind on women's pro wrestling. Mags, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to play like the, you know, oh, I've always supported women's wrestling.
Yeah.
I didn't at some points. It was so bad that it was like, dude, get this out of here, man. Nobody wants to see this match right now. And you remember, a lot of it was the bra and panties and stuff, and they would over-sexualize a lot of it. And as a guy, was I cheering back then? Absolutely. You know, whoop, 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 whoop. Yeah.
But you weren't watching for it to be a wrestling match.
Yeah. They didn't get enough time to showcase their skills. And I think it kind of started with, they had Sherry and Fabulous Moolah, Wendy Richter, and all those ladies back in the day when I first started watching wrestling. They were real women's wrestlers. And then they kind of went to the over-sexualized stuff with Sunny, Sable, everything else. But I think Trish was kind of the first one who was someone who they thought they were going to use as in those like over sexual type of storylines and everything else. And she turned out to be a damn good athlete.
Yeah.
And Trish really turned up to show people, I am more than just beauty and I want to be good at this. So Trish put in the work. And I think that initially showed people like you could be both. And it inspired people. And Lita did the same thing. I thought Molly Holly did the same thing.
Yeah.
You could go through so many names that were great women's wrestlers. Hell, Jacqueline even, a good women's wrestler that never really got her chance, Ivory. And I think they got the ball rolling slowly with it. And then we kind of regressed a little bit. We had beautiful women, but then we would get matches, but they were short. And I know some people used to have the gimmick on this is going to show my Twitter age. They used to have the stopwatch matches for when the Divas would come out, and people would log the time. I don't know if you remember seeing that ever, Mags. Yeah, but people would log the time. They were in there for 3 minutes and 26 seconds, including entrances. And it was like, whoa, that's all they gave Nikki Bella, and she's the women's champ, like the Divas champion. So it built up again, though, and they started the hashtag Give Divas a Chance. And I think AJ Lee is another big proponent for speaking out about pay and everything else that led to women's wrestling getting back to a credible state. And the match that really changed my mind about it, and I still think it's the greatest women's match in WWE today, is Sasha Banks versus Bayley at TakeOver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite women's match.
Yeah, absolutely made some points that I can't even dispute. There was a period, like, going into that Attitude Era where I thought that maybe women's wrestling was going to really kick off. Like I said, you had the likes of Lita, you had the likes of Victoria, Molly Holly, who you said is so underrated. And if it wasn't for her being so adamant that women's wrestling should get, like, put on the main events, she even volunteered to shave her head to make sure the match got on WrestleMania. That's how dedicated to women's wrestling she were. And we did get that kind of regression where Vince reverted back to type swimsuit models who didn't really understand the wrestling business or weren't even really interested in the wrestling business. He just wanted their 5 minutes of fame. And it's good to see that we've got women now who can be counted as among the best wrestlers in the world, and not just the best women's wrestlers in the world.
100% with you on that too, Mags. That's a good point.
So the last one I shall go with. What are your thoughts on tag team wrestling?
Oh, tough here. I want to use the right word because I think we'll say undervalued. I think a good tag team match is some of the best action that you can look at for pro wrestling. Going back to the 80s, Mags, we grew up, you had the Hart Foundation, Demolition, the Rougeaus, the British Bulldogs, the Killer Bees, whoever else you want to throw in there, the Island Boys.
Legion of Doom.
Then we grew up with
my boys.
The Head Shrinkers, the Quebecers. I almost called them the Mounties. The Quebecers, the Steiner Brothers. It didn't matter. When you look at all these tag teams, we've had great tag teams throughout history. We've even had great singles wrestlers as tag wrestlers. Booker T comes to mind with his brother Stevie Ray and Goldust. Mm-hmm. Billy Gunn, another person that comes to mind, teamed with Road Dogg, Bart Gunn. You could put him in there with anybody. Billy Gunn could be a tag team champion.
Great Hollywood Blondes.
Yes. Billy and Chuck. Just great tag team pro wrestling. The Attitude Era had the Hardys, the Dudleys, Edge and Christian, and now we're at the point of the rosters are split, and I think there's enough great tag teams if you just made one tag division.
Yeah.
You could have a lot to mess with. The Revival play a key part in why I love tag team wrestling today. DIY, I love that team. I don't know if you used to watch my prediction videos from back in the day. I used to always pick DIY, and then it would always lose to the Authors of Pain. I even had to do a rant video one time because the one time I picked Authors of Pain for my predictions,
they lost.
And I had to go off, and they got a lot of views actually for that when I was like, damn it, I can't believe this. I'm slamming stuff. I'm like, the one time I pick you, the one time I'm in a contest, and you cost me it. And it's just fun. Tag Team Pro Wrestling has something different to offer with making saves in the match. When you think it's over, it might not be over. You can rest up and get back into some big spots. A guy could come from out of nowhere and help his tag partner get the win. It just adds a different layer to it. So I love tag team wrestling on all levels. And I think their matches just add something different to the show. And I think that it should be valued more.
Yep, I agree with you. And I think that's one of the big reasons why I've taken to AEW as much and also to New Japan, because they really do focus on tag team wrestling. I mean, New Japan, not necessarily in terms of established tag teams, but there is always tag matches on their shows. And yeah, I absolutely love tag team wrestling, and I think it's a lost art in terms of the WWE.
Yeah. Like I said, I think if they combine and do some things, they can help out with that. And with New Japan, if you add in some of those partnership deals that we're hearing about, I think they could put it together. And I'll say this, AEW to me has the best tag division out of anybody.
Yep, I totally agree. Wowie Watch is proud to be working with Powerslam.tv. You can use our code MAGS to get yourself a 30-day free trial and watch up to 4,000 hours of quality independent wrestling content. Just make sure you sign up with your laptop for the code to work, and then after that you can download the Android app or the App Store app and watch this amazing content from Powerslam.tv.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on Powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
I have loved speaking to you, Conrad, today. Absolutely. So appreciate the time you've spent. I mean, I know you're a very, very busy man with family and with your amazing content. Tell all the Wowie Watch listeners where they can get hold of Everything Pro Wrestling, where they can get hold of Conrad Cushman.
You guys can give me a follow on Twitter at EPW Show. If you guys look at it, I have a link tree. Hopefully it's attached somewhere in this. You guys can click the link tree. I'm on podcasts. You can find me on Spotify, Anchor Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever, and the YouTube channel. Type in Everything Pro Wrestling. Look for the black and red logo. We're a little over 1K in subscribers, and I'd love to have some more. So if you guys want to come on over, talk some pro wrestling with me, give me some ideas for shows you want me to do, I'm all ears all the time. So feel free to join in. And Mags, thank you for having me on Why We Watch. This is another great concept from the mind of Mags. I love all of the content that you produce. It's really good, and I want to give a special shout-out to everyone who was a part of Brainbuster Radio at any time. That it really helped me out a lot, and I'm so glad that I got to connect with a lot of great podcasts, and it helped expand my brand. So thank you guys for making me better as a podcaster and a content creator.
Yeah, it was a sad end to an amazing thing at Brainbuster. It was on the lips of everybody in the wrestling Twitter world, and it's a shame how it had to end, but on the bright side, we have made lifelong connections and friendships in this. So it's I can't really look down on it too much. But yeah, absolutely, I love all your content, Conrad. I think you are. I honestly do think you're one of the best content creators in this space. You're a massive, massive inspiration, and that's not me just blowing smoke up you. You make me want to be a better content creator because of how good you are, and yeah, you're just so inspirational. If you have not listened or checked out any of his content, I implore you to do so. You will not regret being a subscriber and a fan of Everything Pro Wrestling. So definitely go and check out his content. Go and give him a follow on Twitter. Again, massive, massive thanks to Conrad. I know his time's precious. I know he's got a very, very busy schedule. So I'm really, really do appreciate him taking the time to be a part of my show. Yeah, thank you. So if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter at DJ Kirby. You can follow the show at Where We Watch Pod. One final thank you to Conrad again. He's a superstar, and I love him to bits, and I love his content. Yep, so go and check him out. And that is the end. Yes.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.